Hello and welcome back. Welcome back to TLC2011.com. I'm very excited that you're here today. Today is our day 9 of 10 days. So lovely to see all of you guys. We've got Maggie and Deseret and Amber and Juliet and Dr. Marlowe and Saz and John. Welcome to all of you guys here in the chat. Thanks for being here with me. And again, thank you for day 9. And I'm very excited. Today's a really special day. Not only is it our second to last day, but we've got a lot of other stuff going on today. Number one, I would like to share with you that this morning we crossed that 4,000 therapist mark. And we now have 4,009 therapists and friends of therapists who have registered for TLC 2011. I could not be happier. That was my goal. That was my dream. And all of you in the chat are excited with me. I'm just ecstatic and so happy that all of this stuff is happening and that I've been able to bring this to you and that we've been able to do it for free and we've been able to give you such quality content. So it's a real special day for that. And in honor of that, I wanted to share with you that for any of you that are in private practice or want to be in private practice, I'm going to pop on to this live stream channel, livestream.com/wealthytherapist, for the next 2 Wednesdays at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern, and I think that's like 9 o'clock London time. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly. But anyway, an hour earlier than we start this, it will be on Wednesdays U.S. time, so if you're in a different, across the international dateline, figure out the date. And I'm going to be here to answer questions about practice building. As many of you know, I am the owner and founder of BeAWealthyTherapist.com, and we have helped nearly 50,000 therapists now to build their practices. So I'm going to be here live, free, and answering your questions. So just go ahead and put that out there. And I hope you'll join me again at livestream.com/wealthytherapist next time. And so when Amber's putting in the chat that that's Wednesday 1 Pacific, June 29th, and also on July 6th, I'm going to do it again. So if you've got questions about practice building, if you've had, you know, issues and you're thinking about, I really want to get that practice going, you're looking for your first 10 or your next 10 clients, come on and let me share some stuff with you. So that's pretty exciting, I think. And then also, for those of you that upgraded to the silver or the gold package at tlc2011.com/upgrade and wanted to know how to get your CE credits, after tomorrow's presentation, we will have the test up, and it will be in your Customer Hub Resource Center for you silver and gold people. And if you're wondering how to do it, on the replay page at tlc2011.com/replay, there's a short video about in the middle that says how to get your CE credits. And I just go through the video and talk about how to take the test. And it's an extremely easy process, and you can either take them for one presenter or all 10 presenters, however you want to do it, and you will instantly get your CE certificate right there that you can print. And remember that you can take that test anytime between now and 1 year from now, and the date that you take it will be the date that we put on the certificate. Okay? So, woohoo! Yeah, excited about that. So today I'm going to get my friend and colleague Juliet, her video queued up for us. Juliet, as you know, is a practice building coach in Vancouver, one of my favorite cities in the entire world. And Juliet and I have been partners, gosh, for a really, really long time. Juliet, a really long time. Juliet's probably in the chat talking about that. And we recently had the opportunity to meet in person, as I told you. We had been, I want to say, business partners for years and years via online, and we talked a lot on the phone, but we never met in person. So we had the opportunity to do that recently. So we're getting ready to go ahead with Juliet. Juliet will talk for about 36 minutes, and then if all's working right with the technology, we'll bring her onto the telephone and answer some of your questions that you may have about social media. So today, Juliet Austin, Social Media for Therapists, The Pitfalls and Promises of Social Media. And it'll be kind of interesting to hear what she says about that. And one of the things I love about Juliet is that she and I disagree on lots of things, and that's why we can do so much fun in our work together. So I can't wait for you to hear Juliet. She knows a lot about this stuff. Here we go.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm here with my friend and colleague Juliet Austin from Vancouver, British Columbia, and from JulietAustin.com, practice building coach extraordinaire and copywriter brilliant. Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Casey. Glad to be here.
It was so much fun. We were talking earlier about the fact that you and I had never met in person after being partners in business for many years, and we just recently met in person in Vancouver, and that sure was fun.
It was excellent. It was great to connect. Finally.
And now it's funny, when I hear Juliet laugh, I can now picture her face laughing, not just the voice of the laugh or the sound of the laugh, too. So that's great. Well, when we were in Vancouver, and actually before that, you've done a lot of work with social media for therapists, and that's why I really wanted you here to talk with us about that. So can you give us a little, like, one-liner, five-liners maybe about what is social media, and then we'll get into the promises and the pitfalls. How's that?
Okay, sure. That sounds great. So social media is basically a way of being social on the web. You know, before there used to be static, you know, they call it Web 2.20, which is basically the interactive web. And before it was Web 1, where it was just a static website, meaning, you know, one-way communication. People went on there and read information, and that was about as far as it went. And then there was the development of blogs first. Blogs, most people know what those are. They're called blog posts when you post on a blog, which is usually an article posting information. And then there's the ability of people comment on that article, the back and forth, the interaction. Then came Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And when I talk about social media, I like to talk about blogging, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, because those are the most common, even though there are many other forms of social media now, and there's new ones popping up all the time. Facebook and Twitter are continuing to grow, blogs continue to grow, and it looks like, at least for now, they're around to stay. So those are the ones I like to focus on. LinkedIn, a little less so, even though that's growing as well. It's mostly a professional network for professionals to network with each other, and also, you know, people use that a lot for, it's really popular for people looking for jobs as well. It's really popular that way. So those are the ones that I like to focus on because they're the most common and the ones that therapists are most likely to use.
You know, Juliet, when we had Steve Frankel talk, the attorney, in our opening session, he was talking about, you know, some of the ways we can get ourselves in trouble with things like Facebook and all of that. So if we could just put people's minds at rest, you told me something like you would never post something in social media that you wouldn't say to a client, because once it goes out on the Internet, it's there forever, right?
Yeah, and so, you know, one of the things about social media, you don't talk about clients, obviously. You wouldn't even talk about clients without names because of the risk that they might be identified. And I still see occasionally stuff, somebody saying, oh, I had a great call with it, just got off a great call with the client. You know, maybe they're not being super specific, but if that client's following them or sees that, they're going to figure out it was them. So it's just a good rule just not to be talking about clients at all there, just for your client's benefit and for your own protection. It's not an appropriate place to do that. So I think that's the first thing that you have to understand. Lots of people have concerns about ethics around social media, and there certainly are ethical considerations that you need to take into account. And there's a variety of views out there, and nobody has the right answer to that at this point, at least in my opinion, although some people might think they do. I think that it is totally possible to set ethical parameters around using social media, so that it is an okay place for you as a therapist to communicate with others and interact with people.
A year or two ago or three, Facebook would have fan pages and you had friends, and there was the privacy settings weren't the same as they are now. Things have really changed a lot, right, over the last year or so?
They have changed a lot, and they continue to change every day. So it's a fast-paced world of social media, both in terms of volume of information that's coming at you and how quickly it goes by in the news feed on Facebook or the Twitter stream on Twitter. And, it's moving very fast and it's changing really quickly and evolving. They're adding things to the technology all the time. So it's, it is challenging to keep up with it all at times.
But would you say, because I guess I... you know me, I'm not super into social media, but I've seen, and tell me if I'm wrong, that it's a safer place for therapists to be than it may have been a while back because of the ethics.
Yes, but I think people should consider and figure out the ethical considerations and before they go on there. And on Facebook, you have to be really careful about your privacy settings. You have to manually set them. They're not automatically set. So you have to do that. And also, most people, and you know, I tend to agree with this, I think that there's some situations where you could, there might be some exceptions to this, but for the most part, and you know, I'm going to explain this because a lot of people don't know the difference if they're not on Facebook. There's a Facebook profile, and then there's Facebook pages, which used to be called fan pages, and now they're just called pages or business pages. And what we usually recommend is that, first of all, you have to have a Facebook profile to set up a page because you set up the page through the profile. And the profile is where you friend people. Either they send you friend requests and or you send other people friend requests and then they accept or reject or you accept or reject. So it's a two-way relationship. And I think it's really unfortunate that Facebook is using, you know, it used to be only a friend platform when it started, and that's why I think they use this term friends. But I think that's one of the biggest obstacles for therapists is because they're using the term friends, even though some of the people you connect with, a lot of them aren't even going to be friends at this point in time. However, having said all that, it's kind of better to not use that, to not friend people that you're going to be using for business. And if you're using Facebook with your profile, then you just use that with your, you know, maybe colleagues and family. Set your privacy settings if you want to keep it private so that nobody can see your posts or what people are posting on your wall, and or set up separate lists in there so that your friends and family and, you know, anything that you want to be private is set privately. And then what you would do is you'd set up a business page for your practice. And that's a one-way relationship where people either like your page or not. And if they like your page, it then shows up in their news feed. If they like your page, it shows up in their news feed on Facebook, and they will see your post that you post related to your practice or whatever information it is that you want to share. And it's the one-way relationship so that you wouldn't be friends with them. They're just, in a sense, following you as they would on Twitter, basically. Yeah,
that's where I wanted to go for a second. So let me see if I've got this right. A blog is like an online website where I can post an article, and then the two-way part of it is people can comment, right?
Right.
And so the advantage of a blog, why I would want to do it, is it gets my message out into the world, and it allows me to interact with people should I choose to comment on their comments or allow them to comment on my blog.
That's right, and you can choose that. There's a setting that you can choose, yeah.
Okay, so then I move into, okay, so that's one form of social media, right?
And it also sets you up as an expert because you're providing fresh content that's valuable in your field to your target audience on a regular basis. So you're building a relationship with them through that content, and you're starting to build your credibility as an expert in whatever area it is that you're writing about.
Great. So that then can lead, in terms of promises, that can then lead to reporters looking at your stuff, potentially calling you, perhaps speaking engagements. We know of somebody that got a book deal from blogging. You know, so that would be a reason.
Absolutely.
That would be a thing to blog. Then we move into the Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. So as I understand it, Twitter is like a microblog where you just put 140 characters out, I'm sending stuff, and pretty much it's still a one-way communication, right? I'm just putting, people can respond back to me and comment, but we're not having an ongoing email exchange kind of thing.
That's right, and you can follow people who may not be following you, or people may follow you who you're not following them. So it's one way in that sense, or you could both be following each other, but you might not ever communicate unless you do what's called the at reply. You know, you actually can, you know, respond to something somebody else posted on there.
Right. So if I wanted to, say, get to know some of my speakers, for example, on this conference, I could be watching what they tweeted and retweeting what they tweeted, or perhaps connecting with them in some way. And that's a good way to build collegial relationships, right?
It's an excellent way to do that, yes. And it's also just like blogging. You can share information. You can share tips on there. You can share when you post, when you write an article or a blog post or a newsletter article, you can post it on there so others might see it, the people that are following you on there. You can post links to other information that's relevant to your target information, so it's not just always your own information. Again, that's setting you up as somebody who is an expert again and who is somebody who contributes valuable information, both of their own and of other people's, that's relevant to the target audience.
I read this guy's story about doing something at the North Pole, and I just thought it was so inspirational. I read it in a magazine or saw it on TV or something. So I found his Twitter ID, and I tweeted him and asked if I could use some of the pictures on his website in my newsletter and a little story about him. Within 4 hours, somebody from around the world got back to me and gave me permission to do that. That never would have happened if I was making a phone call or trying to mail a snail mail letter or probably even sending an email. So it was
no.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very fast on there. It's very quick, yeah.
So the reason I would want to use, again, blogging or Twitter as a microblog is that it really sets me up as an expert. It allows me to get my message out. Potentially could build my practice, although I'm not trying to build relationships online with them, right, with a potential client.
Well, you don't want to, you know, I mean, people kind of get freaked out about all that, but really it's no different than having a blog. I mean, you might have potential clients commenting on your blog, just like you might have the occasional reply, you know, response to the person on Twitter who may become your client. But in terms of, yeah, really developing an in-depth relationship, well, then you wouldn't be doing that because then you're getting into the whole dual relationship issue. But from my perspective, I mean, just because you've had a contact or somebody commented on an article you wrote doesn't mean that you're having a dual relationship with them.
Excellent. Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, it's only when you get into that real, you know, developing some kind of friendship with them. Or, I mean, the other thing you don't want to do is start giving advice to people on their personal problems on these platforms, because that's not really an appropriate place to do that. And you know, most of your people get afraid, well, what if my client starts posting on their, you know, whatever? And, you know, most clients are smart enough to know that that's not the arena, number one, where they would do that. And if they ever did do that, I mean, first of all, you should have a social media policy, if you're using social media, telling them what, you know, what the parameters are, so then they're not going to do it. And even if they forgot and did it, you could just email them or respond and said, let's take this privately. And even if somebody is, you know, somebody you don't know is following you starts to do that, you could, you know, there's ways you can divert that so you don't have to be, you know, giving a bunch of advice there to someone who's in distress on those platforms.
So then I move into Facebook, which feels a little bit different to me than Twitter and blogging, because it's more of a, it feels different to me, I guess. I don't know. So with what I understand what you said on Facebook is that we have our personal profile and we can set our privacy settings on our personal profile so that we can have public or different lists of people. So if I post something, I can say specifically to whom this post is going, so that it, you know, if I say, oh my gosh, my underwear doesn't fit, my clients aren't reading that, or, you know, whoever. Okay. I have to wear my fat pants today. I saw one girl, well, I'm not even going to go there. She might be listening. okay, so we can set that up.
That's for the profile. And right. That's just to keep potential clients or keep everything that you're communicating like that private.
Okay.
You know, I don't even use Facebook. I'm not a practicing therapist anymore, but I don't even use Facebook that way. I don't really use it to communicate with friends. I mean, you could, but then you would set your privacy settings that way.
Right.
And then the page is what we really recommend for you
exactly.
to do for business.
That's where I was going to go next. So we have a profile, and we can take care of the privacy settings that way. Then we have a page, and they used to be called fan pages because my understanding is it came out of the music industry. and or entertainment industry, and now it's a business page or a page. And the way that it works is that people like your page, and then once they like your page, you can post things on a wall that might be psychoeducational stuff. It might be I've got a workshop coming up. It might be go to my blog and read my article. It's, again, a way to increase your credibility and your reach to people. Is that right?
Right, right.
So let's talk about it from a practice building standpoint.
Well, you know, the question is, do people ask, you know, can you build a practice on Twitter or Facebook or whatever? I think you can. It's no different than, you know, you and I have been telling people years before blogs were there that they should be, you know, doing newsletters and things like that. The key is, though, you can build a practice, but it's the same as any practice building tool. You're going to have to work it consistently, have a clear, you know, strategy, set goals for what you're trying to achieve there. You have to obviously get people to like your page, and then you have to post content consistently that's interesting and compelling, so it's got to stand out in the news feed. You can't assume, this is one of the assumptions, I think, you know, people have a lot of misconceptions about how these things work or what they can accomplish, and they post something on there and they go, oh, nobody's commenting. Well, you only have 10 people following you, and yeah, most people aren't going to comment, number one, and if you want people to comment, it's going to have to be a really interesting post or something that stands out, because you know, some people are following hundreds, if not thousands, of people and pages, and their news feed is going by, and they may not even see it, number one, and even if they do see it, you know, it's competing with all those other ones on there. So there's a real trick to, you know, being interesting and being consistent and posting often, and then engaging with people on their posts too, because it's not just about pushing your own content. It is an interaction, right? Like we said, a two-way communication. So you should be commenting on other people that you're following, because whenever you comment on somebody else's, let's say you like a page or something, if you comment on one of their posts that you see in your newsfeed, then chances are it's going to show up. It'll show up in the people people that like their page will see it in their newsfeed. So that's kind of where the viral aspect of Facebook comes in. But one important thing, and I don't want to get too technical or complicated here, but just because you post on Facebook doesn't mean everybody's going to see it, because Facebook has this algorithm that they call EdgeRank that actually prioritizes who sees what in your feed. And if you're not interacting with people that have liked your page or vice versa for a while, they may not even see your post. So, I mean, it's not something to be concerned about, because it gets kind of complicated, but just to be aware that not everybody might see everything that you post.
That's really good for me as an introvert to know, because every once in a while I get out there and I try it, you know, and I comment on somebody's thing, and then if I don't hear back, it's like it felt like I walked up to their back and said something and they kept their back to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just the nature of being online, you know, like there's only a small percentage of people that are going to see what you wrote, there's a smaller percentage that are going to find it interesting, and then there's even a smaller percentage that's going to comment. And of course, the more interesting you are and engaging you are, or maybe if you start commenting on others, and you know, they might start commenting on yours, sometimes that happens because you're starting to build some kind of connection with them there. But yeah, you have to really, well, it's the same thing, Casey, as getting clients. I mean, you can, you know, go do a speaking engagement with, you know, as a way of marketing, or go to networking meetings. Only very few of those are ever going to call you as either refer to you or become a client. You know, the numbers, the percentages are always low, right? So it's kind of a numbers game in that respect.
Yeah, I was just looking at my notes of some of the things that you talked to me about. So if I want to use this for either, let's say I want to build myself, get some credibility. If I'm talking to you on Twitter or Facebook publicly, and that means that people in our respective news feeds or followers are going to be seeing that.
So, that's right.
So for me to hang out with somebody that has a higher status than me, so to speak, in my industry works well, right? Because it gives me a little bit of the same credibility. If I start saying, like, let's say I've written a book on divorce, and I start connecting with, you know, Michelle Wiener Davis, Divorce Busting, and we're starting to talk, you know, on Facebook or on our blogs or on Twitter, what happens is that her readers might see my comments and think, oh, that's smart, let me go check out her. And now I've got more followers and I've got more connections. So to me, that's a lot of the power of this. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, exactly. That's a main part of it. Although most people don't realize this on Twitter, and I think that's just because it's contradiction to what you just said, is that on Twitter, well, there's always these exceptions, right? And there's the one on Twitter is, and if you're doing at replying somebody, only the people that are following you and following that person that you're at replying are going to see the at replies.
Okay.
So
yeah, yes on Facebook, no on Twitter.
That's right. Yeah, unless the people are following both of you. Yeah. So there's always those. But, you know, I just want to say, if I can interject here, there's a couple of things that we didn't talk about why people would be on there, whether or not you're using it to practice build, or do you want to?
No, go for your thing. I'm really interested.
Okay. Well, it's just, these are two other reasons. Whether or not you're building a practice on there, or using it to build a practice, or there's two things I wanted to say. One is, because the numbers of people going on there are just increasing all the time, I think it's you might think about, if you're not on there, you may not be perceived as being current or up to date. And with the younger generation, these things are becoming the norm. There's, you know, it's like they're all using it. So, you know, those are things you can think about. And even if you're not using it as a practice building tool, you can be on there and use it somewhat just so you have a presence at least, and so you're making an appearance. The other thing to realize, most people don't think of this, is that all the new information in your field is being tweeted on Twitter, or posted on Facebook. I mean, it's like there's so much happening there and it's so instant that it's a really good way to stay up to date with what's happening in your field. Because you can follow pages that pertain to, you know, topics of interest to you in your practice, or modalities that you're following, or research on certain areas in psychology or whatever. Like, I just think it's a good way to stay up to date in your field and see what people are talking about, and see, not only get the current research and information, but to hear what people are saying about it, to, you know, get people's opinions and reactions on it. So that's a whole other reason I think that's often overlooked of why it's valuable to be on there.
I think that's a very good point, because I'm not reading all the journals, I'm not reading every website, but when somebody I'm following tweets a particular story and says, this is a great story about something I want to learn about, I will click on and read that article, and I find it fascinating. So, yeah, that's Absolutely. A very good point.
Yeah, okay, so those are the two things I wanted to say. So, you know, my stance is that I think people should be using it. You know, why wait till it's, you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, this is a pitfall. It's a reason for using it, but it's also a pitfall. I just think it's good to keep up to date, even if you're not using it in a major way. It's also, you know, there's no guarantee, though, that these things aren't going to fade and something else is going to come up in its place. So, you know, it's like, you know, nothing's guaranteed for the long term, but things change so fast that, you know, it's a good idea to at least try to keep up with some of it if you can't keep up with all of it.
More pitfalls?
Oh, it can be a time sucker. That's one of people's real big concerns, is how much time it's going to take. And if you're not focused and if you don't limit your time, you could spend your whole life on Twitter and Facebook. And many people seem to do that. So, you know, I would suggest, you know, be clear on your strategy. Why are you on there? What are you trying to achieve? And then set even time limits for being on there. It is possible to spend, you know, 20 minutes, 20, 30 minutes a day. And, you know, maybe if you don't want to do it every day, if you want to use it as a practice building tool, though, you're going to have to be on there pretty much, you know, every day or at least weekdays. I'm usually on there most days, but I don't usually go on weekends. And sometimes I skip days because I just don't feel like going there. So, you know, you can kind of do that, I think. But you do have to limit the time because it can be a time sucker, but it doesn't have to be. If you, you know, marketing takes time. Whatever you're doing, it does take time. And it's not just about you posting information, but if you're going to be on there, you're going to be reading, stuff. A lot of people don't realize, I think I was reading the other day, 62% of the tweets on Twitter are people posting links to information. So, you know, there is a lot of information, like going back to what I said a minute ago about this being shared on there. And, you know, so part of that time that you spend on there might be reading information. But, I mean, if you're acquiring new knowledge or learning stuff, well, then it's valuable time because you should be spending time, in my humble opinion, doing that anyway. You know, whether it's for your practice building or it's for your client's benefit, your professional practice. I was going to say something else about I know one of the pitfalls. I think that it's really hard to conceptualize and to really understand the value of Facebook and Twitter, especially Twitter. People have a really hard time getting that, and I really don't think you can get it until you really get in there and use it and are following a substantial number of people that are interesting and tweeting interesting things and watching how people use it and experimenting with it, and it does take a while. I mean, I went on there, I don't know when Twitter started, but I think I first went on there in 2005, if that seemed right. Maybe it wasn't even there. It was 4 or 5 years ago, let's say that. I don't know when it first started. And I went on there and I was followed some people and I went, what? What is this? And I was like, what? I couldn't even possibly conceive of why anybody would want to use it. You know, left there and didn't go back there. I kind of maybe went back periodically. And then as it started getting more popular, I just said, okay, I have to learn this. And it took me a while, but once I learned it and saw the value of it, and it, you know, I had to do that by experience though. I couldn't really get it any other way. And I think to a lesser extent that's true with Facebook. So that's the unfortunate thing. It's really hard to grasp these concepts until you actually experiment.
Do you have any advice for people that are, I want first advice for people that are very experienced with it, how they could make it a better experience? How can they find more followers, for example, on Twitter? Ways that they could use it to increase their credibility. You have any tips for us there?
Okay, so the experienced folks first, you want to say, like ways to find more followers?
Because they've been very patient as we've been discussing some of the basics here. So, mm-hmm.
You know, I can somehow get you some links that they can use. There's one of the things that people say is, you know, both Facebook and Twitter are international, which is true. And certainly you can connect and follow people and, you know, build relationships or professional relationships with people internationally. But if you're using it for practice building, you're going to want a substantial number of people that are local, of course. Now, there are some tools that you can, on Twitter, that you can use to find local people to follow. I mean, there's many ways to get new followers. I mean, one is to use these tools and then to follow people that you're interested in who are also local. Because probably something, I think there's something like a third of those people might follow you back on Twitter. So it's a little bit easier on Twitter than it is on Facebook because you have that. Then there's I better send you the links to these. It's just easier.
We'll post them in the resource section.
Yeah. So that's one thing with Twitter, if you know, finding the people that are local. Obviously, you want your Twitter icons and Facebook buttons on your website. You want them in your newsletter if you're sending it out. You want, you know, either on your business card or letting people know where they can find you when you're out doing public talks or networking, those kinds of things. And you have to work to get people to like it. You just can't put a little icon on your site and expect that people are going to automatically click it because, again, only a certain percentage of people on your website are going to click your Twitter follow button and Facebook button. So it's going to take time to build a community, I think. And probably the fastest way is to go find people to follow that are in your local area using the search tools that we're going to post on Twitter. Facebook's a little more difficult because there's I think you can still do it, but it's a, and one way you might do that on Facebook is go to the search bar. Actually, there's another tool that I could send you for Facebook. Just, I don't know, somebody developed it where you can now look for people and pages where you can specify the location, or you can look for groups in a certain area and maybe then go, you know, like those pages and then follow people on there and maybe, you know, join in the conversation, and some of them might like your page back. The same thing happens on Twitter, by the way, when you're out there posting. If it shows up in someone else's stream or something, they might follow you back. I find what happens for me on Twitter, if I'm following somebody and they're not following me back and I like what they post, or and I comment on it, or I at reply them, some, obviously, usually if somebody at replies you, you're interested in knowing who that person was. So, you know, most people, or at least a lot of people, are going to click on and to find out who you are. And if they like what they see, they're probably going to follow you too. So I've seen that happen with me a lot of times.
Interesting. I have a thought about LinkedIn, but so the bottom line is post often, post regularly, follow people or connect with people that you think are using it well so that you can kind of watch what they're doing and then maybe interact with them on some way. Mm-hmm. And then any other tips on that? Share content, share good content, either your own or post somebody else, like go through Google Alerts on certain keywords so that you can get good articles there.
Well, this is for more the beginners than the more advanced, but the other one would be to, you know, be patient and give it some time. And don't, you know, it can be extremely overwhelming. And, you know, a lot of therapists have technology phobias and, you know, fears of technology, or, you know, and it's normal to get overwhelmed with these new platforms. I mean, you know, I have to learn technology all the time, and every time I have to learn a new one, I go, oh, no, not another one, just because it's time consuming. And, you know, it can be frustrating to learn a new technology. But, you know, it's fairly easy to get set up a Facebook page and a Twitter account and just start, dig in there and start doing it. I've seen a lot of people, you know, in the social media course that we did, lots of them set up accounts and everything, and then they were, like, afraid, didn't know what to post. And so you kind of, you know, you have to kind of really dig in there and start posting, like I said earlier, in order to, you know, see some results and start seeing how it might work for you.
Excellent. I think another thing that you said that was super important, I think you said this another time and you alluded to it here today, is that there's no one marketing strategy that's going to build your practice or gain you credibility in your community, right? There's no one that's going to be the only one. And personally, this is my viewpoint. Tell me what you think. If social media is not your thing, then at least get a presence out there, just like a website. You want to have a presence out there, but you don't have to make it something that you force yourself to do every day. If you're better at doing community marketing or something like that, do that, but at least have a presence. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would, with one caveat, and that would be don't set up a Twitter page and then just leave it blank for months, a Facebook page, or leave it blank for months on end, because then that kind of looks really bad. It looks like, oh, here's an account that she doesn't really even use, or he doesn't even use. So if you're going to set it up, I don't know, at least, I don't know, minimally post something once a week, and that would might take you like as little as 30 seconds to a minute or two. You know, at least, you know, try to be some, you know, be active to, on some extent. Yeah, so that I would agree with. You know, it's interesting what you said about there's no one way. I think there's no one magical way. Like people often, I'm sure you get this all the time too, what's the best way to build a practice? Well, there is no one magical way to do that. And I don't know about you, but I usually suggest people use a combination of 2 to 4 to get started, you know, depending on what they are. It is possible, I think, to choose one and do it really well and do it consistently and build a practice that way. It is possible to do that. But people don't usually do that. It's good to have an exposure in many different places. But, you know, Susan Gerleo, my colleague in the Social Media for Therapists program, she built her practice using social media, but including blogging. I mean, you know, posting content on blogging and building, a lot of the relationships or at least of the followers that way through posting the content on the blog. So it is possible, just like you could, you know, set up, I've heard of people building practices by, you know, doing one speaking engagement a week for several months until they had it. Or, you know, people who have a really good system for marketing to doctors, then they could do it. But I usually suggest 2 to 4. And you can certainly include more as time goes on, but yeah, you have to be consistent and patient regardless of what you're choosing to do if you want it to be a practice building tool.
So for those of us who want to learn more, we can go to socialmediafortherapist.com/homestudy. Is that right?
Well, if they just go to socialmediafortherapist.com, they can find it there. Yeah.
Okay. Socialmediafortherapist.com. I think that, you know, after I said my point, I think yours is better put that you could do it on one, but if you have all your eggs in one basket, you and I both said that's just a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, it can be for sure, definitely.
Just in case. You want to have your backup plan.
That's right.
Okay. Well, clairvoyant as I am, I can imagine that our chat stream here is going kind of crazy. So what we're going to do is I'd like to end this interview with you, Julia, and you're going to be on live to take some questions, right?
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, great. So we'll see you on the flip side.
Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, Julia.
Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Casey.
Okay. So
fun.
Yeah, it's always fun. You know, this is how Juliet and I got to know each other for years, was just over the phone. And now here we are years and years later. How many did we decide that was, Juliet?
I think 4 or 5.
4 or 5, yeah. So really, really, I'm so excited that you're here. Thank you. And thank you for being the social media expert. When I was listening to what you said, I was just so impressed when you would shout out statistics. Like, I remember I was reading the other day that X percentage of tweets are about information. That was just really amazing. You know a lot.
Well, I'm a bit of an information junkie, but, you know, you probably are too, Casey.
I am, and you know that this is one of the areas that I'm not an expert in, and in the chat, people were liking each other's Facebook page, and I kept putting my page in there, which, by the way, has 17 likes so far. And we have 20,000 on our mailing list, and we have 4,000 at this conference, and I have 17 likes on my Facebook page, and I couldn't even get the page name right, so Amber had to help me with that. Quick couple questions. How much time do you think somebody ought to spend on social media?
Well, again, it really depends on what their goals are. Like, if your goal is to have a presence, keep up to date with what other therapists are doing, keep up to date with what's happening in your field or your specialty area, you might spend, you might go on there a couple times a week for 20 to 30 minutes. I mean, I'm just throwing these numbers out because there is no right or wrong number. If you want to use it for practice building, you're going to have to be on there pretty consistently and really, building up the relationship and connection with people. And, almost daily you're going to have to be on there. It's possible, I think, to do something 20 to 30 minutes a day after, once you get set up. And some people freak out and say, well, that's a lot of time. Well, yes, it's time, and marketing takes time, and keeping up to date in our field takes time. So that's the way the world is.
I know. I always say, if you bought a restaurant and you wanted to market that restaurant, you would probably spend more than 20 minutes a day trying to figure out how to make customers come into your restaurant. And we as therapists, I think, aren't trained to do that, and coaches too. We're not trained to do that. And so we seem to think that anything is a whole lot of time.
Well, yeah. And, therapists spend time doing administrative stuff. They spend time, phoning clients. There's all kinds of things that take time when you're in a practice besides the time you spend with clients. So, you make your decision and you do it accordingly. And, somebody's mentioning on there, I forget who that was now just recently, worried about starting something and then not having the time. Well, I think if you're going to bother to start, you should, make a decision that you're going to make the time to do it. Because you don't want to start it and then just kind of let it fall off. And a lot of people, I don't have the stats for that in front of me, Casey, but the numbers of people who start Twitter and also Facebook pages and then just abandon them are huge. So, unless you're going to really be using them it's not really worth the time. And, you know, I just want to reiterate that the whole idea that it really takes time to get it, to really get value. And I've been getting some tweets lately from somebody, I think took our social media course a while ago, and he tweeted me, I think, today and said, oh, you know, I had no idea this could be so interesting. And I think that's what starts happening once you start using Twitter. I think it takes longer to get that. But it can be, in my opinion, not everybody agrees with this, because I know people that are really active on Facebook, on their Facebook page, and they really prefer that. But I really prefer Twitter. I think it's kind of more fun, and I like the quick, fast pace of it.
I know you enjoy Twitter. We've talked about that before. And one of the things that I thought was really cool about Twitter was when that plane went down in the Hudson in New York, where they were getting the most current news was from people tweeting at the airplane, at the site.
Exactly. Things are happening immediately. Things are being reported on Twitter before they're reported anywhere else. So it's also a good place to get your news. Some of you probably heard we had these... we had this hockey ride in Vancouver that stopped a lot of us last week. And I was watching, you know, people were watching their television, you know, watching the real time, you know, what was happening. I was watching Twitter. I was watching my Twitter feed, just following the hashtag to see what was happening, because things were happening there, I think, quicker, and you get a much larger variety of things happening than you would on the television, which is focused on whichever reporter is there at any given time.
I was in Vancouver the night that the Canucks went into the Stanley Cup playoffs or finals, whatever it was, and same thing. I could hear yelling outside my window because my hotel was just about two blocks from the stadium, and I wanted to know what was going on, and I went through the major TV stations, and they all had television on, so I got on Twitter, and then that's how I found out what was going on.
Yeah. That's what I do. Whenever there's some real events happening, I go to Twitter and just start looking for the hashtags and following the hashtags.
Now, I know that, Chandra asked you this in the chat, but I got to put my glasses on here and read this. She was wondering if there was a way that you could, you know, she says, I have my LinkedIn and Twitter tied together, and I've tried posting different content on her Facebook page. But if you have a Facebook fan page, a LinkedIn account, and a Twitter account, do you have each of these tied together so that the same post goes to all three, or do you post something different on one or more?
Great question. There's a variety of opinions on that. Generally speaking, I would say you can maybe do that occasionally, but don't do it all the time. Because in case people are following you in all three places, they might just, you know, think, oh, that person's boring. They just post the same information everywhere. And then if they start realizing you're doing that, then there's not really any reason for them to follow you in more than one place. So if you want to make it enticing for people to follow you in all those different places, it's a good idea to post different information. And sometimes you might post the same information, or sometimes you might post the same information at different times during the day. Because not everybody, of course, is going to see everything that you post because of how quickly things go by.
Juliet, I'm not sure whether you said this today or whether you said this in a previous talk that I was listening to, where you gave percentages of how much should be self-promotion, like if you're marketing something versus sharing information. Do you have something on that?
Yeah, I'd say 10 to 15%, and probably 10 is a better number. So that means 85 to 90% of what you post should be information that's valuable to your colleagues or target audience, if you're using it for marketing and practice, your followers or the people that have liked your page. So could be information or thoughts that you have or tips that you have, links to other articles or things you read, updated information in your field, newsworthy items related to that's going to be interesting to the people that are following you. And then a small percentage, like I said, 10% or so of, come follow me here or, sign up for my new course or whatever it may be. So the whole idea around social media is it is a social platform. Sorry, the other thing I should have said is don't just be posting things. You have to be commenting and at replying on Twitter to people, because too many people do students thought it'd get on there and then just start blasting out information with no interaction. And if people start following your feed and see that, you're not gonna be building relationships that way as much as you would if you start interacting, retweeting others' posts, sharing other people's information on Facebook, really getting involved.
I think that's a really good point. Since you and I have talked about this, and I'm working on it, Juliet, I'm really working on it, and I started noticing that there were people out there that would just, in my entire feed, they would just retweet every single person's feed. Mm-hmm. And I did this, and I noticed I was doing this too, and I was thinking, well, that's nice that I'm retweeting somebody else's thing, but I'm not participating, I'm not adding value to the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you really want to have a variety of posts. You know, I have a mixed feeling. What you'll see a lot of people do, and I do it sometimes too, is when they retweet somebody else's tweet, they will add their own comments to it, and sometimes you don't have room to do that. And sometimes it's useful to do that, but sometimes I find the people that I follow regularly who do that on all their retweets, I stopped reading them because sometimes the title of the article or the link or the tweet itself was really compelling, and this is where copywriting comes in. And then the people kind of mess up the tweet with all their comments, and it kind of doesn't stand out as well. So I think it's a useful thing to do that sometimes, to comment on somebody else's tweet. But don't do it all the time, because especially if the title of the original tweet was really compelling, because it can kind of clutter and muddy the water so that it doesn't stand out as much. I don't think I've mentioned this on the video tape, but another thing that is a good idea to keep in mind is keep your tweets about 120 characters in length so that people can retweet them. You can write up to 140 characters, but if you kind of make an effort to keep them at 120, that allows room for people to retweet.
Yeah, that's been my pet peeve. I count up, so I'm at Casey Truffo, plus a couple spaces. I always leave 13 to 14 spaces, so I'll do 140 minus 13 characters or 14 characters so somebody can do a simple retweet. Because whenever I have to go in and edit to take out 13 or 14 characters on a retweet, drives me crazy. So it's a pet peeve of mine. So, yeah, so make your tweet shorter than 140 characters.
Well, you also brought up a good point there, Casey, is that when you're retweeting, if there's not room to retweet it, you can edit the original retweet that belongs to the person who originally tweeted it, but just be careful that you don't, change meaning or anything. But you can do that, and sometimes you have to do it, or you can't retweet it.
Right, because if somebody leaves me, it's 140 characters, and I go to retweet it, it's going to put the RT and their name at the front or whatever, and then I have to take some characters out if I want to retweet the thing and make it all done, all the right length. So,
yeah.
That's why sometimes we put the PRT in there as partial retweet. If we had to take something out. But again, I think Juliet's right. You're trying to stay true to the meaning of the original tweet. Mm-hmm. And whoever thought 3 years ago we would be talking like this for an hour?
No kidding, huh?
Let's go to Facebook for a second. I know that if you don't have 25 likes on your Facebook business page, you have this long URL, this long
right.
name. Do you know, I'm going to put you on the spot, do you know how you get a shorter one?
Yes, but I don't have the information in front of me right this moment.
Okay.
You could go, if you pretty well anything on Facebook, you go under Accounts at the top right of the Facebook page and go to the Help section, and what do they call it? A unique URL. Just kind of do a search in there, and they'll you can find the instructions on how to do that. But you do need 25 page likes, and then you can
right.
have your own unique name.
And Clinton at the Sydney Therapist says you go to facebook.com/username.
Excellent, Clinton.
Okay, thank you. See, this is why the chat is so fun. There was another question here from Barbara, but let me just scroll back up in the chat because everybody's getting so active in the chat. This I didn't quite understand, but she says, I have a Facebook page linked to my personal email. Should I create my professional Facebook page with my professional email?
Oh, maybe she's saying that, I'm assuming she's saying the email to the account. I mean, you only have one login when you have a profile and a page. You have your profile, and that will have whatever email that you have as a login or you signed up with, and then that will be used for your page as well when you're logging into your account. However, on your profile on your page, certainly you could put your business email in there where you fill out your profile of, you know, what who you are and your bio and all that. I hope that answered what you're asking.
Okay, I think that's close. Go over it with me one more time. You can't have more than one business page?
You can have as many business pages as you want. According to Facebook terms of service, you're only supposed to have one profile. You will see people that have more than one profile, and technically that's not allowed by Facebook. And I think, you know, who knows, if you're taking a risk, you could be shut down. I mean, you never know what is going to happen. Facebook sometimes shuts people down without warning. So I would recommend that. But you can have as many pages as you want. Now, you don't want to set up a ton of pages unless you have separate businesses for some reason, or you have separate niches maybe that you're doing. So it's hard enough to, you know, follow one page and get likes for one page. But, you can have as many pages as you want.
So Barbara says, should I have two profiles? No, you want one profile.
And only one profile,
don't have two profiles. And then Catherine is asking, can I have a corporation page if you have a corporation? That's just another business, right?
That's just another page, yeah.
Okay. I don't mean it's just. I'm sorry, Catherine. Yeah. I don't mean it that way.
Yeah.
Yay, you have a corporation, but you've got another page on Facebook.
That's right.
Okay. For those of you that aren't watching live, I invite you to open up the chat. It'll be in the replay link for those of you in the replay page. For those of you that are not Silver and Gold members, for the Silver and Gold members, it'll be in your Customer Hub site. And you can go in there, and lots of people are putting their Facebook pages in there, and you can like them and then ask them to like you back. And I feel like I'm in fourth grade again. So.
Oh, really?
Please like me. Please like me.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you know, you were talking, Casey, about how you felt when you first went on social media, and you felt like you'd say something and nobody would respond. I really think that the best way to approach that, I mean, you know, I felt that way when I first got on there, too. But I think after a while, number one, you build up a network and people start responding to you more, and as you respond more to others, it's kind of the idea. You have to give a lot before you start getting back.
Right.
And you have to not take it too personally. You just have to go with it and know that that's like, I find if you know that, you know, that people sometimes miss what you say, or, you know, they're busy and they don't respond, or whatever the case may be, you just kind of have to keep moving on.
I appreciate that, and I'm working on it.
You're doing well, Casey. I'm just seeing you tweeting up the storm lately.
Well, I have, and I have to say that part of the reason that we ended up with so far 4,009 attendees to this conference had to do a lot with social media.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so I'm really sold, and I feel a little bad because I didn't give a lot of content. I just kept talking about what we were doing here at the conference. But the other part of me was saying we were giving the conference away for free, so hopefully that was a lot of content.
Right.
Okay, one quick thing that I have, this is just another pet peeve of mine. I know that there are some private Facebook groups that some of you are in because I'm in there with you. And this is my pet peeve, and I'm speaking on behalf of me. Please don't put anything in there, even though it's a private group, that you would not want on the front page of the newspaper, because you do not know that something could change. And there were some people in there talking about how their clients were driving them crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And thoughts on that, Juliet, in 10 seconds?
Yeah, well, I was actually finished on the video. Look, you don't want to be saying things like that. I mean, what if a client sees that? How is that going to make you feel? And especially if the client, you know, who knows what the client's going to think, or if they're going to wonder if that's going to be them. So you really don't want to be saying comments like that in the public space at all. That's really not a wise thing.
Well, and it's a private group, but you just never know that a client might get in there because for some other way. So
exactly. where somebody says, so-and-so said at the private group the other day, the clients are driving them crazy.
Right.
Oh, I'm one of their clients.
Especially at 6 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. Casey, I just want to comment. I saw a question in there. Somebody said their Facebook username goes to their profile. You can have a username for your profile and a separate username for your page after the 25 likes.
Right, perfect.
They're totally separate.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. And Juliet at julietaustin.com and also socialmediaforthherapist.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue Casey.
And listen, everybody, I love you, and in a really good way for those of you who want to hear that, and not in a weird way for those of you who want to hear that. And please go to tlc2011.com/replay to get all the replays. And also, again, there is the little video in there if you want to know how to get continuing education units. If you've seen a lot of these videos, you might as well upgrade and get the, for only $97 US, and get the continuing education credits and all of this good information, including the handouts that Juliet's got for us. So thank you, and don't forget next Wednesday and the following Wednesday, U.S. time at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 Eastern, I'm going to be back here talking about practice building and answering your questions. And also tomorrow we have the lovely Christine Coral back, who's going to be talking about how to get your message out with your website. So I love you guys. Mwah. Thanks, Juliet. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.